From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, how Texas could see a reshuffle of the state's congressional map to keep Republican control of Congress.
Donald Trump is clearly just freaking out.
When is a hood not a hood? When President Trump puts Confederate names back on military bases.
And to do this in this manner is just really very mean-spirited.
And why you could see tomato prices jump at the grocery store.
Support for this podcast of Texas Matters comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company. By investing in local communities and rewarding policyholders for prioritizing safety, they are building a more resilient Texas. More at texasmutual.com/texansgetit. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. A political power play is quietly unfolding in Texas that could redraw the congressional map for the state and decide which party rules in Congress. The goal is to squeeze more Republican seats out of Texas, but there are red flags, and this could backfire for the GOP. Currently in Texas, there are 38 congressional seats. Of those 38, 25 are represented by Republicans and 12 seats by Democrats. There is one vacant seat in a solid blue district in Houston that won't be filled until November. Only three of the 38 are considered competitive swing states where it's possible that a Republican or a Democrat could win. The remaining 35 seats are safe. The maps were drawn in a way to give those incumbents, Republicans or Democrats, a pretty good shot at being reelected. But all that could soon change.
That's right. They want to push it even further.
That's Texas Democratic Congressman Greg Kassar.
They want to try to make it so that they make their district even weirder shape so that politicians can pick their district rather than voters picking their politician.
He's noting that Texas is already considered one of the most gerrymandered states by 538, the Statistical Political Journalism website. Because Donald Trump won Texas in 2024 with 56% of the vote, then if the congressional map was drawn without a partisan bent, Republicans would have about 22 seats, not 25. And those three extra seats the GOP picked up there, that's been enough for the Republicans to gain control of the current Congress. Now, Kassar says the Trump White House wants even more Republican seats out of Texas.
Donald Trump is clearly just freaking out.
Thought he would get any popular, but Donald Trump's popularity had plummeted in the last few months because Trump is prioritizing giving tax breaks for billionaires while driving up costs for everyday Americans, while trying to kick over 10 million Americans off their health care. So Trump feels like he's going to lose this midterm election, so he's calling up Governor Abbott to try to change all the rules in the middle of the game that he's losing.
Historically, the party of the current president, Republican or Democrat, they lose seats in Congress during the midterm election. So this would be bad news for Donald Trump. A democratically controlled Congress would torpedo his legislative agenda, and Trump could be impeached again. But Trump just can't order Texas to redraw the congressional map. Only Governor Greg Abbott can do that by calling a special session, and Abbott has not indicated that he's going to do that. Texas State Representative Jeff Leach, a Republican from Allen, told KTVT-CBS Dallas lawmakers are prepared in case he does.
We, of course, drew maps, congressional, House, Senate maps in 2021 after the census. I was on the redistricting committee at that time. So, look, we're gonna see what happens over the next few weeks. And if the governor calls us back into special session, whether it's on redistricting or any other matter, then we'll show back up to Austin and we'll do our jobs.
To achieve Trump's goal of getting more GOP seats out of Texas, that would mean taking safe Republican districts and turning them into not-so-safe districts. That's because the new map would be spreading thin the state's Republican voters. But if they're spread too thin, Representative Hakeem Jeffries, the leader of the House Democrats, says that could be a gift for Democrats.
The challenge that Republicans have right now is that the way in which the Texas map has been drawn, it's already an extreme partisan gerrymander. And so if you make any changes to that map, which quite frankly, there are several Democrats who have looked at it, who perhaps may welcome changes, they're going to endanger at least 4 to 6 Republican incumbents who are serving in the Congress right now, are in safe Republican districts, and will likely be put into competitive districts that Democrats can win, particularly in a midterm election with Donald Trump in the White House. Be careful what you wish for. A lot of Democrats that we've talked to from Texas who've actually come to the conclusion, based on the fact that the map is already gerrymandered at its height, that they could open up 4 to 6 swing seat opportunities that don't exist right now for Democrats.
Jeffries says a new Texas map could give Democrats enough seats to take the majority back.
Be careful what you wish for, because you just might get it and you won't like the result.
Cal Gilson, a political science professor at Southern Methodist University, says a mid-decade redistricting for political advantage has happened before in Texas, and there's nothing to stop it from happening again.
The 2003 redistricting and the ripple effects of that is one of the great political stories in Texas history, because it was the first time that Republicans had the governorship and majorities in both houses of the legislature in a very, very long time. And they decided to take advantage of that by fastening down their majority status through redistricting.
Democrats tried to block the redistricting by breaking quorum and fleeing out of state, but all that did was slow down the process.
And I think what's distinctive about the potential redistricting that could occur in Texas now is that there is a lot more ambivalence, particularly in Texas, about the prospects of this mid-decade redistricting. It seems to be being pushed principally by political people in Washington, D.C., specifically in the White House.
Gilson says many Texas Republican members of the U.S. House are not keen on this plan because it will endanger their political futures. Right now, they have comfortable districts that they can easily win in.
So some of them are dragging their feet.
If they drag their feet too long, the window of pulling this off before midterms could close. The deadline to file a declaration of intent to run for Congress in Texas is December 8th. For many, the celebration of Juneteenth continues into the weekend, and for some, they will also be celebrating the bravery of a lesser-known historical area that affected enslaved people, the Underground Railroad's connection to South Texas and into freedom in Mexico. Lon Gonzalez in Corpus Christi has the story.
The American Civil War was a tumultuous period in American history, with Northern and Southern forces engaging in the most intense battles. But there was another battle going on in Southern states, with enslaved black people working to find a way to freedom. The Underground Railroad was the answer, providing passage for escaped slaves to places north. But few know that same Underground Railroad cut a path through South Texas into Mexico.
It is becoming more widely known that people who were self-emancipating and seeking freedom from being enslaved across the American South were not only traveling north to northern states and then into Canada, but they were traveling south through Texas and across the Rio Grande to achieve freedom in Mexico.
That's Roseanne Bacha Garza, anthropology lecturer, history instructor at the University of Texas Rio Grande Valley, and also works with CHAPS, the Community Historical Archaeology Project with schools. Bacha Garza has worked on the Underground Railroad's southern pathway to Mexico extensively through the Rio Grande Valley Civil War Trail Project and has taken the information to schools throughout the region since 2015.
It's one of those tidbits of information that people don't consider as being part of the South Texas landscape, because we've all learned about Harriet Tubman and her great work to help emancipate people.
In Corpus Christi, I'm Lon Gonzalez.
The U.S. Army says it's taking immediate action to implement President Trump's decision to restore the so-called traditional names of seven military bases. The names were initially changed in 2023 after Congress banned base names tied to the Confederacy. But the Trump administration has found a way to sidestep that law. Texas Public Radio's Dan Katz has reaction from Fort Cavazos, Texas, which is returning to its former name of Fort Hood.
While it would be illegal under federal law to name a military base once again after Confederate General John Bell Hood, it's not illegal to name it after a service member with the same last name. In this case, World War I Colonel Robert B. Hood.
They found some people with similar names, so that's how they worked around it.
That's Lawrence Romo, a member of the federal commission that recommended renaming Fort Hood to Fort Cavazos in 2022. That came after Congress passed a law saying military assets could no longer refer to the Confederacy or anyone who served in it. Romo says the Trump administration is now sidestepping that law by renaming the base for the World War I Hood.
There was no movement to rename the base. Nobody ever told me that they want to rename it back to Fort Hood. I can't think of a single person that's telling me we should rename it back to Fort Hood.
The Fort Cavazos name honors Richard Cavazos, a Vietnam and Korean War veteran who once commanded the base. He was also the Army's first Latino four-star general and a Medal of Honor recipient. Romo says the commission's work was based on merit and local community input. Cavazos is part of a storied Texas family with a history of military service. To them, the name change is an insult.
I think it's really a backhanded way to change the name from Cavazos to Hood for someone that didn't have the same level of achievements and bravery. And it's just so unpatriotic the way I see it.
That's Ramiro Cavazos, a cousin of the late Richard Cavazos. He says his family wasn't consulted in the process, 2 years after the Army held a celebration for them.
We had over 150 Cavazos family members there, many of them who have served our country. And to do this in this manner is just really very mean-spirited. But we'll continue to move forward and be proud Americans and hope for a better day.
The Pentagon did not respond to our request for an interview, but President Trump explained his decision during a recent speech at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, which along with Fort Benning, Georgia, was already renamed earlier this year.
We won a lot of battles out of those forts. It's no time to change. And I'm superstitious. You know, I like to keep it going, right? I'm very superstitious. We want to keep it going.
Rivka Mazlish is a senior research analyst with the Southern Poverty Law Center. She says she wasn't surprised by the move and that it fits into a pattern.
Including military bases named after people who literally made war against the United States of America. You know, I always say, like, what other country has military bases named after people who made war against it? But there's a history there. It's a history of a propaganda campaign to erase the true history of the Civil War and establish white supremacy through other means.
Mazlish says she doesn't want to denigrate the service of the people with the same last names as the Confederate generals, but she questions if the new base names really honor them.
And I think it's insulting to the names of the people who have no association with traitors or white supremacists that now their name is being used to recall the memory of traitors and white supremacists.
The Army said in a statement that the name changes of the seven bases will take effect immediately. I'm Dan Katz in San Antonio.
Inflation has fallen slightly, but prices at the grocery store are still much higher than they were before the pandemic. And that is Texans and others living on the border looking to save money by shopping in Mexico. KTEP's Angela Caterga reports from Juarez.
In a brightly lit grocery store in Juarez, music sets a festive mood. Savvy shopper Diana Garcia is in the produce section looking for the best prices. The Juarez mother says she sees a lot of people from the U.S. buying groceries here. And more are doing so, Garcia says, because of the strong dollar-to-peso exchange rate. Stretching that dollar is a necessity for families coping with higher food prices on the U.S. side of the border. Cristina Castruita and her husband routinely shop in Juarez, which borders El Paso.
We've been doing it since the kids were babies, especially because the formula is half the cost in Mexico than it is in El Paso, and it's a better name brand too.
Castruita says now she shops for cheaper brand name laundry detergent for her boys aged 8 and 10. Her oldest son Alfredo chimes in with his own price-saving favorites.
A lot of fruits, they're bigger, less expensive. They taste better. The watermelon tends to be nicer.
Watermelons are allowed, but some produce is prohibited by the U.S. because it could carry agricultural pests. His mother says when it comes to fruit and other items, she likes the variety available in Mexico.
We buy a lot of things like yogurt because we have, not only is it cheaper, but we have really exotic and different flavors available.
The dairy section in most Mexican grocery stores is much larger. Other items the family buys?
We prefer Mexican ketchup also. And of course, tortillas. We buy them in bulk and then freeze them.
Generations on the border have looked to Mexico for lower prices and a wider selection, and vice versa. Shoppers from Mexico also cross into the U.S. for certain items, including clothes and electronics. Tom Fullerton is a professor of economics at the University of Texas at El Paso.
That's sort of the holy trinity of retail economics, when consumers can have access to lower prices, better quality, and more variety.
A survey by the city of El Paso just months before the pandemic found local residents spend about $352 million a year on groceries in Mexico. Fullerton tracks the border economic outlook in this region in an annual report. He expects higher U.S. tariffs to affect shopping behavior all along the border.
From Brownsville all the way to San Diego, they'll cross the border and take advantage of lower prices as a consequence of what in effect would amount to a federal sales tax.
Beyond chasing cheaper prices, it's a way of life on the border. The kids get a haircut, the family enjoys a meal, and time with other relatives, all in Mexico. Castruita says there are many reasons to spend an afternoon across the border.
To save myself some money, to expose the kids to their culture, and just for fun. It's cheaper and delicious.
I'm Angela Cocheriga in Ciudad Juarez, Mexico.
The U.S. trade war with Mexico continues to stew, and America's fruit that thinks it's a vegetable is caught in the squeeze, tomatoes. Tightening cross-border trade and higher prices could catch up with consumers, but Florida tomato growers say this tariff is necessary. So I took a look. It's another busy lunch at Mitieta Mexican Food Restaurant in San Antonio's historic Market Square, and hot plates are hitting the tables. One ingredient present in every order is the red tomato.
Tomatoes just about in every product that we sell, whether it's for a taco meat and carne guisada, almost every recipe has tomatoes. I'm Pete Cortez, Chief Enchilada Officer, CEO of La Familia Cortez Restaurants.
Cortez said last year his restaurants diced about 200,000 pounds of tomatoes. Every one was grown in Mexico.
From our experience, you know, the tomato that we're able to get from Mexico is frankly superior.
And Cortez is concerned about what an impending tariff on the fruit from Mexico is going to do to his prices.
There's a cause and there's an effect. If the cost of tomato goes up by 25%, then people are going to probably start looking elsewhere.
On July 14th, the United States is set to impose a 21% anti-dumping duty on most fresh tomatoes imported from Mexico. Robert Gunther, vice president of the Florida Tomato Exchange, says this is different from the Trump tariffs.
The reason why this is called an anti-dumping duty versus a tariff is because that the U.S. government has concluded that the Mexican tomato industry has been dumping tomatoes illegally into the United States.
Gunther says over 25 years ago, the Department of Commerce ruled that Mexico was illegally undercutting Florida's tomato growing industry.
They broke the law. They broke the U.S. trade law. And the U.S. government has sided with that.
So none of this makes sense anymore.
Skip Hewlett is the chief legal officer at NatureSweet, a San Antonio-based company specializing in growing, packaging, and selling greenhouse-grown tomatoes, the majority of them grown in Mexico. Hewlett says NatureSweet isn't dumping Mexican tomatoes, selling them below cost. He asked, how then would they stay in business? And he points out that the investigation into Mexico's tomato imports was conducted in 1995 and 96.
Maybe it did in 95 and 96, but they put up an agreement in place that was in one form or another has been there for 30 years to protect the U.S. industry.
But during that time, the U.S. tomato industry has been withering. Its share of the U.S. market has dropped from 80 to 30%.
So we've lost farms, we've lost jobs, Some of the most experienced, dedicated growers in this country have been forced out of business. And that is all because over the last 30 years, there has been a systematic neglect to abide by U.S. trade laws and sell the tomatoes from Mexico at a fair market price.
Hewlett counters by saying Mexico growers are able to produce a tastier tomato in high volume using state-of-the-art greenhouse technology.
The members of the Florida Tomato Exchange are open field. They grow the big tomatoes, gas them red, and consumers have said, we really don't like the taste. That's what they're going to provide at a higher cost to the consumer.
Gunther says the 21% duty will not result in higher tomato prices. But Hewlett says NatureSweet will have to raise its prices because of the tariff. Tomato, tariff, or duty, consumers might say it's all the same to them, but if it does mean higher prices, they won't be happy. Mexico already isn't happy. They have indicated the possibility of imposing retaliatory tariffs on U.S. meat exports, including chicken and pork, if the tomato duties are enacted. I'm David Martin Davies in San Antonio. According to Spotify, an estimated 16 million people routinely listen to Spanish-language pop music, and that audience is growing fast. New listeners, even non-Spanish speakers, are discovering everyone from Selena to Los Tigres del Norte. And as Texas Public Radio's Yvette Benavides tells us, one American musician is finding success in blending Spanish-language pop with rock.
In 2021, Jason Fountain asked a question that few others were asking.
What would this song sound like?
Rata de dos patas.
In rock. Let's find out.
Rata de dos patas translates to two-legged rat. It's a song by the beloved Mexican singer Paquita La del Barrio, skewering an ex-lover. Fountain said the sentiment of the song is a natural fit for rock.
It's a nice work of art, little masterpiece. You know, I think a lot of people wouldn't have realized how it would sound in rock, but I think the way we do it has that angry sound, because rock can definitely bring that energy.
A lot of people agree. Even the composer of the song shared Fountain's video on Facebook, helping the song go viral. In 2023, Fountain founded the band Pink Cheese Green Goes. The name is a play on words and is a selfie-facing expression about white Americans. Fountain said it's also a way to confront some of the negative attitudes about singing in Spanish.
If we're in a free country, we should have the right to speak whatever language we want. And the fact of the matter is that on this planet Earth, there are more bilingual or multilingual people than there are monolingual people.
Jason Fountain and his band have been winning over fans, fusing Spanish language pop hits with rock. When they recorded an English version of the Tigres del Norte hit La Puerta Negra, the song had over a million views online. Now he insists on performing the song in Spanish.
I eventually reverted back to doing the songs in Spanish. Like, it was cool to do it in English that one time, but really that's not why I was doing this.
Fountain describes his sound this way, as if Nirvana were a band from Mexico with a little bit of ska and some metal.
The majority of the music that we do is covers of mostly Mexican music. However, we have covered other artists like Hombres G from Spain and Leodan was an Argentinian singer, although I believe his audience was mostly a Mexican audience.
We lost a great artist, Argentinian singer, Señor Leodan. And so we just learned this one recently before the passing, and we're happy to share it with you guys here tonight. Hope you all can sing it along with us.
Thank you.
The Georgia native's affinity for the Spanish language and Mexican culture goes back to his childhood.
Really, the story goes back to when I was probably in sixth grade, and my friend Edgar, he was an immigrant from Mexico, and we did not speak the same language.
But the two would hang out together after school, playing video games and even talking on the phone.
That was funny, because, like, if we're not speaking the same language, I don't know how we were able to communicate. But obviously, I learned a few words from him here and there.
One of the first things Fountain learned to say in Spanish was
Lucha Libre. But I think I've always been a friend of immigrant people. When I was, like, 13, and I'd always make friends with the kids that would come in from, like, Bosnia, Russia, all kinds of countries. I had a Pakistani friend as well.
Fountain said that when he was 17, he committed to becoming fluent in Spanish. He did that through music.
Selena from Texas was probably your gateway drug to a lot of people to get into Spanish-speaking music.
But I wonder if you've ever had a negative reaction to what you do with Spanish music. If anybody's ever said to you, why would you do that?
I've had it from both sides, actually. You know, so I've had probably more negative comments from people who speak Spanish. But I've also had some negative comments from gringos, and that's the ones that, like, that I'm just like, you need to just, like, get it together. Hating is just, you know, you don't like my style or something like that. But hateful is when you're talking, like, about someone's language and their culture and stuff like that.
But Fountain is finding a growing audience that appreciates his fusion of rock with Spanish language music, like at a recent concert in Chicago.
Para que quieres volver. It was an all-ages show. So it was people my age mostly, but also they brought their parents, you know. We had, like, at least three abuelas in the front row, so I couldn't do any stage diving because I didn't want to hurt anybody's abuela.
I'm Yvette Benavides in San Antonio.
That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. Email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. There are past episodes of Texas Matters at tpr.org. Download and subscribe to us wherever you find cool podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.